So I teach public speaking at the University of New Mexico, and I always tell them, you got to figure out what it is, get rid of that pre-presentation anxiety. And I'm sitting there, and I know Nina's, you know, coming down to 1 minute and zero, and she sits down, and I'm like, oh my God, how do I take care of my anxiety? So just as a disclaimer, if you hear my heart beating, it will subside. Don't worry. Don't call anybody. I'll be okay. So I'm Julie Lucero, and I'm going to talk about trust development and community academic partnerships. And this study, this is my dissertation study, and it was embedded within the project that Nina just talked about. So it's a mixed method study. So what is trust, and why is it important to study it? So I was sitting in the last session, and every single presentation said something about establishing trust, and that was a necessary, fundamental concept that had to be discussed and developed in order for community academic partnerships to persist. So then I thought, okay, my work is done. I don't have to say why it's important. But in the literature, trust is studied from all different kinds of disciplines. And it's based on iteration, according to Luhmann. So pretty much when you encounter people over and over again, you get to understand what their intentions are. It's also an interplay between the truster, so the person doing the trusting, the trustee, the person asking to be trust, and the context. So just like Nina was saying, context matters. That all of the things that bring people together really, you know, creates the system of how these interactions are going to happen and how trust is going to develop. And I really like this quote by Hardin that says, only a small child, a lover, Abraham speaking to God, or a rabid follower of a charismatic leader might say, I trust you without an implicit modifier. So really there is a situation or a type of trust that happens, but it doesn't necessarily transfer into a different situation. So it's really interesting about community academic partnerships and community-based participatory research particularly is that we claim that it builds trust. But yet when you look at the research or the literature, there really isn't a lot out there saying that yes, indeed it does. So that's what my interest was. I wanted to, as a CBPR practitioner, I really believe that it does build trust, but I wanted to prove that, right? I mean, that's what we're supposed to do as researchers. So when I looked at trust and CBPR in the literature, I found three glaring gaps that I wanted to try and address. The first one was a definition. Trust has been measured or studied for over 50 years, and there are 96 different definitions in the literature. So that causes a problem because what definition do you use and what measures do you use to then measure that definition, right? You need them to jive in order to make any sense out of it. So I wanted to find out from community-based participatory research partnerships, community academic partnerships, what does trust mean to them? Then we also see that trust is generally presented as an interpersonal outcome. It's usually presented or an outcome as binary, yes or no, or it tends to focus on personal attributes. And this is absolutely fine. It's a limitation for where we're at now because we can't continue doing that. We can't continue to explore it as a binary. We need to find out, go a little bit deeper. So I'm building upon the work that's already been done and hoping to take it just a little bit further. And trust reports in the literature are often written from the academic perspective. Now we're here to hear more from community, right? And so that's what I wanted to know. What, from the community perspective, does trust mean? How is it developed? And just to try and get a little bit better understanding. So to add that community perspective in. So I'm going to tell you, this is going to be the agenda. So we're going to go over the trust definition. I'm going to show you an alternative way to look at trust. And then we will go from there. So this is from the 63 different interviews from the qualitative case studies. I was able to look at 5 of the 7 case studies. 2 of them, one I didn't have my questions in the interview guide, and then one of the case studies just didn't quite match with what I was trying to do. So I'm using 5 case studies here, 63 interviews. So this is all qualitative. When I asked individuals, what does trust mean to you in this type of relationship? What does it look like? This was one of the major themes that I got. So it was a sense of responsibility for the partnership. And this really meant that everybody pulled their weight. They showed up when they needed to. They did what they said that they were going to do, and they had a genuine care for the partnership and what the partnership was set out to do. The second theme was respect and safety, and this really should be reversed. It should be safety and respect. Safety, according to community academic partnerships, was the ability to have a space where they could go to, they could voice their opinions, they could voice their discontent with what was going on in the research, or anything like that. Respect was actually having somebody genuinely listen to those concerns and those opinions, and so working together to create that space. Now, the third theme was having shared goals and values. And we know from all kinds of CBPR research and presentations that you have to have alignment, right? It has to matter what you're doing. You have to have the same sorts of values, core values, and how you're moving forward. And also the goal has to benefit the community and the academics, right? There has to be this genuine benefit. So then in this case, trust was creating a space where you have genuine respect and safety and shared values so that you can create a sense of responsibility for the partnership in moving forward and achieving these shared goals. So here was the second limitations that I saw in the literature. It's usually measured as or reported as a yes-no binary. Trust either exists or it doesn't. But think about your own personal relationships, whether it be your friendships, your romantic relationships, relationship with your coworkers. It doesn't just jump from no, I don't trust you to yes, I absolutely trust you. There's something that happens in between. And that's what's missing. There hasn't been anything that I found that shows what happens in between. So together, our research team had developed a type of trust that we had seen just from our own experience. We took that to community members and said, does this make sense? And they said, absolutely. And then simultaneously, we looked at the literature to see if there was, in fact, support for these different trust types out there. And there was. So this is what we found. So no trust is obviously suspicion or no trust, with the individuals. Unearned trust is that kind of like a police officer. You trust the police officer is there for your safety in some cases. And so the researcher then, or a physician, there's this sort of implicit trust that sort of comes with the job, right? So that's sort of unearned trust. Neutral trust is I'm kind of on the fence, I'm not quite sure where we're going with this, but I'll go along for the ride for a little while. Functional trust is often characterized by having some sort of memorandum of understanding or agreement so that it's written in that the benefit is there, the benefit outweighs the risk. Proxy trust is exactly what it sounds like, and this seems to be the one that resonates most with folks. And that's I trust you because this person that I trusts you. So it's that trust by proxy. And then critical reflective trust is we can talk about all kinds of things. There can be bumps in the road. We know that we're going to go back, but we're going to persist and we're going to move forward and our relationship's going to be okay. So for this study, there wasn't a lot of people that said that they were in this mistrust area, so I had to collapse this. And really all three of those have some element of mistrust or suspicion. So from here on out, you're going to see a four-level trust. So it's going to be mistrust, suspicion, and those other three. So we had already found out that this resonated with community members and academics, but then we wanted to see, could we then really use it as a measurement tool? And it turns out you can. Yay. So what I wanted to do, my program was in health communication, so I wanted to see how communication then results in trust. And we know that communication is everything, right? I mean, our social networks, we can really consider them to be continuous dialogues. So what I was looking at was ethical communication, and ethical communication being those communication patterns that really show care and concern for somebody, no harm. So here, this is in the quantitative survey that Nina was talking about, and the alignment with CBPR principles is the CBPR partner focus. And so what happened was in those eight principles, I know there's 9, but we only used 8 of them. So in the 8 principles, it fell out into 2 different scales, one being a partner focus and one being a community focus. Now, I think that the community focus probably has something to do with this, but what we asked partners to look at or to consider was, how does your partnership view these particular things? So I think that's why this one came out so well. So you see, for functional trust, so suspicion is the referent category also, and this is a multinomial logistic regression. Suspicion was a reference category, and so functional trust then ended up with one sort of predictor, being the partnership focus, and then proxy trust had that in addition to respect, and then critical reflective trust had all three, well, those two plus participation. So this is kind of exciting because it shows that this is more or less an additive type of a model, right? So, and it also suggests that over time, if this really is a development model, then trust develops over time, right? So we all know that intuitively, but now I can say that it's empirical. Okay. So not only, I mentioned before, this is a mixed method study. So not only were we able to show this, but we also got evidence from the qualitative interviews to support this. So they converged really nicely. So in the qualitative interviews, again, we asked people, how did trust look at the beginning of your partnership? How do you define it? And listening was one of the major themes that came out in the qualitative interviews. And so using Lipari's definition, she says that listening is the judgment-free act of making meaning for genuine understanding. And so this is a quote from Martina, a community member, and really I just want you to focus on the last two lines of that, where it says, our community, our partnership has worked because there's people in here that are open to listening and to hearing you, and that you feel valued, heard, appreciated, and that your voice counts. So people that participated in this study, in this case studies, on average, they had been together for about 8 years. So they had already known each other, they had already worked together. So in these cases, I think they're really coming from that critical reflective trust. They're already talking on that level. And so then if you think back to the definition of trust, what they're talking about is genuine critical reflective trust here. So listening was one theme. The other theme was learning. And it's a process, so Freire, it's a process of acknowledging historical moments and being receiving to learning and relearning information. So as academics, sometimes we get caught up in being the expert, but you have to also have to understand that what you know is also changing, and you have to take in all of that new information in order to relearn what's going on. So this is Daniel, a community member, and here he says, you know, I never thought that I'd be working with 2 mayors, with PhD type people, and here I am. I'm working here, I'm learning from them, I am learning about myself and how I fit into my community. So it's also reflection, it's learning about yourself, it's learning from other people. So learning was one of the major themes as far as trust development goes. And then the last one was participation and commitment. And participation was really the physical or the action of commitment. So here it's the physical and cognitive presence. So it's not showing up to a meeting but being on your computer the whole time. It's actually being there, understanding what's going on, listening what's going on, participating in a very genuine way. To give you context in this quote, this is an academic member. She had just moved to the area, and she was starting on a project that was already ongoing. And she started going around to community folks, and she was trying to talk to them, get to know them. And a community member questioned her, how long are you going to be here? Because if you're not going to be here very long, I don't want anything to do with you. So Eliza had to then, you know, say, I'm here for the long haul. I'm committed to this. I will participate. And she had to convince them before they would allow her to continue on or actually sit and talk with her in a very genuine way. So just like Nina said, you know, research, we know that there's not one magic bullet. And so all of these, I think ethical communication is just one small piece that it goes into the trust development process. One thing I forgot to mention in the multinomial regression is it gave me an R squared of 31%. So given all of the things that go into trust development, accounting for 31% is pretty good. So I think that speaks directly to my implications that the way we communicate matters. The words that we use matter. The way that we engage people matters. And just like I said, if our social networks are really communication networks or dialogues, then we're always engaging with each other, and so we really need to be mindful about how we engage. This work also extends trust as an ethical construct so that we can create a shared meaning between us so we're working on the same definition. It also produced an alternative measure for trust, that scale, the development scale, and it shows that mixed methods is well suited for studying complex constructs. My next step, I'm hoping that it's innovative enough. I want to use a system dynamic approach to model trust in community academic partnerships and see if we can figure out the yes and the no's, the yeses and the minuses, to see really, you know, what is it that is central for building trust and community academic partnerships. So thank you very much for your time.